You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Cause her, you cause me. What you? Oil. Anything she needs, she can call me. Don't worry about her, that's my seat. Oh, that's all me. Just know if you call
new.
Her, you
cause me, cause new music. That's right. If you cross her, you cross me. Eddie Sheeran, my boy.
Nobody comes close, and I don't ever want to run around.
Don't worry about it, that's my seat. That's all me. Just know if you cross her, then you cross me.
Cross me. As a grudge holder, I love this song.
Then you cross her.
Colleen likes it. Because when I sing it in the car and I'm dancing, I point at her, if you cross her.
Now what you not gonna do is stand there crouch for me like you got kung fu. That's their crust arm running your mouth like a busted. But you don't know
that my girl ain't doing CrossFit. Boom.
Kung Pao is your with a cross kick. Put your hair out, wear out, you exhausted. You do a slide and you tell you, yeah, keep a little blade up.
That's it.
No one say hi to me without better pay your respects
to the quit.
Better do that without
a word. If you cross her, you'll deal with me. I think that you should know that.
If you cross her,
then you cross me.
Ed Sheeran featuring Chance the Rapper. If you cross her, you'll get me. No, nobody's coming close. I think that you should know that. If you cross her, then you cross me. Stop sending me emails. I'll sing whenever I want to.
So if you cross her, then you cross me.
Okay, now, having done that, I'm fucking pissed, okay? More American service members killed, and this time a car bombing in Kabul. Right? We're in peace negotiations with the fucking Taliban. Somebody needs to lay the wood to those son of a bitches, okay? Because you don't kill us without us retaliating in a fucking big way. And I don't get what's going on in Afghanistan. Right? Somebody needs to get the target list out and says, all right, get them up in the air, boys and girls. Right? Because we're going to lay the wood to these son of a bitches. And so I'm reading the news this morning, and I am not happy. Like, all this bullshit about us pulling out and us making a deal with the Taliban and handing Afghanistan over to the Afghan people. That's code for us getting the fuck out of there because we're tired of it. Well, who fucking started that shit? Just pisses me off. And I know people saying, oh, you got to get rid of it. You know, it's not going to change. I got it. But when they kill us, we kill them in big numbers. That's the way it works. And you can see where restraint's really helping, right? We've had more American service members killed in Afghanistan, the last month than we have had in, I don't know, the last fucking year? So I'm not happy, man. I am not happy. I keep reading this shit. What the hell is that? I keep reading this shit, and it just pisses me off. Because that is not the way it works. We're still over there fighting. So somebody needs to get their asses jacked up to know that you want to come and do this shit, somebody going to fucking pay. All right? And so, anyway. So, good morning out there to everybody. Thursday edition of All Marine Radio here. The Lynch and Kenny event's going to happen. And we recorded that last night. You'll enjoy it. We tried to talk about General Mattison, his kind of whirlwind tour, and kind of thoughts coming out of it. And we kind of do that. And then we kind of get to, should general officers, when they retire, should they, you know, do it? You know, General Mattison, I'll quote him, quoting Omar Bradley, when you retire your uniform, you should retire your tongue. Well, I don't believe that. I don't believe the narrative is a better narrative without Jim Mattison involved in it. I don't believe the narrative is a better narrative without, right, Paul Van Riper and Tony Zinni involved in it. Because who's left to the fucking narrative? Don Rumsfeld? That piece of shit? Dick Cheney? That piece of shit? No. No, let me tell you, I said, what, a week or so ago? Those guys ought to be on Devil's Island, and that would be merciful to them. You do not have the right to get hundreds of thousands of people killed for your fucking theoretical event that you put no diligence in. No diligence into it at all. There are people that studied that shit. There was war plans devoted to it, and they tore all that shit up because they knew better. You don't have that right. And then write books about it and make millions of dollars on it? That's disgusting. And so there might have been a day and age when the world was more separated, right? When, Vietnam, you could make the case for, you know, so pre-internet, you know, and the way the world's connected now. You know, but you could probably make the case even Vietnam. There was only a few people that spoke out against it. One of them was Colonel David Shoup, right? The Medal of Honor recipient. And he got shown the fucking door, man. He got shown the door. And because he said, this is not going to turn out well. So my point is this. The world is way more connected now, right? So there used to be this standoff space between us and the rest of the world where there isn't anymore. We are a global power. We are in everybody's face. We're in every corner of the globe. And we are connected electronically like we've never been connected before in our lives. So in my opinion, the world has changed. And there might have been a time in our history when there was more, you know, more time for debate. Maybe we had statesmen, right? And I don't know that we did. I mean, you know, you read history books and they certainly appear to be that way, but I don't know if that's not nostalgic in some way. That they were every bit as driven as the things that drive, you know, politicians today. And so, but if I say that the world wasn't as close as it is now, it wasn't as connected. It wasn't on top of each other the way it is now. I think that would be relatively accurate. You know, we would have stuff going on, but it couldn't have been reported in the news because people didn't know about it. Right? And so did nations engage? You know, were they as, was in the United States specifically, you know, in all over the place? No, that's a post-World War II event. And so, you know, Bradley is echoing, you know, time-honored traditions of George Washington and all that shit. I got it. But when I look at the way the debates go and the jackasses that are involved in them, the superficial knowledge they have of what some fucking staffer briefed that guy, and now he's going to get up there and pontificate about it. He hasn't devoted his life to the security of the nation. He hasn't devoted his life to the study of war. He hasn't devoted his life to the study of what comes after wars. Just hasn't done it. Fundamentally ignorant about the subject. Right? But riding some kind of political event, some kind of historical event, wrapped in their own politics, done, you know, for what reason? They're politicians, so you don't know. And the debate's going to be left to them. Not only no, but fuck no. And so when I hear, so in the Lynch and Kinney event, we talk about that kind of stuff. So you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it. But I am pissed about the Afghan thing. Right? The next story I want to read is that we serviced about 90 different targets, killing about 700 Taliban. That's the next story I want to read. Okay? And trust me, we got a target list. I don't know if we're restraining that. I don't know if we're whacking them, right? But if we weren't whacking them, right, we ought to whack. We ought to whack the living shit out of them, right? The 23rd hour and the 59th minute whack job before we sign the treaty. Oh, guess what? Mike Pompeo doesn't want to sign the treaty. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Well, we'll talk about that shit right now. This is in Time magazine right now. Now, Time isn't your grandfather's Time, okay? I know that. Exclusive story in Time. Who's it written by? Kimberly Dozier. I don't know who she is. The U.S. is closing in on a deal with the Taliban that is designed to wind down America's 18-year war in Afghanistan. But the best indication of how risky the pact may be is this. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is declining to sign it, according to senior U.S., Afghan, and European officials. Quote, the agreement in principle that U.S. envoy Zalmay Khalilzad has hammered out in 9 rounds of talks with Taliban representatives in Qatar would make the first tentative steps towards peace since U.S. and allied forces deployed to Afghanistan following the 9/11 attacks. Defense Secretary Mark Esper was scheduled to discuss the closely held details of the deal with President Trump in a September 3rd meeting, according to senior administrative officials. If Trump approves and a deal is struck, why is Esper, right, briefing the president? I don't know. Anyway, if Trump approves and a deal is struck, it could begin a withdrawal of some 5,400 U.S. troops, roughly a third of the present force, from 5 bases within 135 days. Now, let me tell you this. Mattis, right, talking about Barack Obama, right, this week, don't think that's not a, I won't even say veiled, it's not a veiled threat, what would it be? Don't think that's not purposefully done. Okay? But the deal doesn't ensure several crucial things, those familiar with the discussions tell Time. It doesn't guarantee the continued presence of U.S. counterterrorism forces to battle al-Qaeda, the survival of the pro-U.S. government in Kabul, or even an end to the fighting in Afghanistan. No one speaks with certainty. None, said an Afghan official taking part in the briefings on the deal with Khalilzad. Quote, it is all based on hope. There is no trust. There is no history of trust. There is no evidence of honesty and sincerity from the Taliban. And know this, right? I learned this in Iraq in 2004. They can negotiate any deal with you. It has no standing. You want to know why? Because you are the infidel on their land. And so as a result of that, Allah will smile upon them for hoodwinking you into a deal and getting your ass out of their country. So it doesn't have any legal standing with them. And then the sentence goes on. Show that they think that they have fooled the U.S. while the U.S. believes they should, that should the Taliban cheat, they will pay a hefty price. That may explain why Pompeo declined to put his name on the deal. The Taliban asked for Pompeo to sign an agreement with the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, the official name of the government founded by the Taliban in Afghanistan in 1996. 4 U.S., Afghan, and European officials familiar with the discussions tell Time. Having the Secretary of State sign such a document would amount to a de facto recognition of the Taliban as a legitimate political entity, and he declined to do so, an Afghan official said. Pompeo's office declined to comment before the publication of the story. After it was published, Pompeo said through a spokesman that he might sign if Trump and all parties struck a deal. Quote, there is no agreement to sign yet. If and when there is an agreement that is approved by all parties, including President Trump, and if the secretary is the appropriate signatory, he will sign it, State Department spokesman Morgan Organis emailed Time Wednesday evening. There are two alternatives. Khalilzad himself may sign it, or the U.S. and the Taliban may simply issue a joint statement supported in turn by the U.S.-backed government in Kabul and a number of other countries, including Japan, Russia, China, two Afghan sources familiar with the deliberations tell Time. The diplomatic sleight of hand might solve the signature problem, but it won't do much to address the core challenges facing those who want to give peace in Afghanistan a chance after four decades of war. As it stands, the agreement would set the stage for the withdrawal of most American forces by the end of November 2020 if the Taliban do three things. One, open negotiations with the U.S.-backed Afghan government. Two, reduce violence near areas that U.S. forces control. And three, keep foreign militants out of areas they control, according to current and former U.S., Afghan, and European officials, all who spoke on conditions of anonymity. So, there you have it. There you have it. So, yeah, good luck to the people of Afghanistan, because I don't want to say you're getting sold down the river, but, again... And again, let me just tell you why it's important that guys like Jack Keane speak publicly. Why, in my opinion, it's important that Tony Zinni speaks publicly. Why it's important that guys like Paul Van Riper speak publicly. And why guys like Jim Mattis speak publicly. Because they are smart, well-read, thoroughly studied men who've been immersed in these problems for decades. I would tell you, given their experience in specifically, not academic studying it from afar, but there on the ground trying to solve these problems and deal with them, they are peerless in our country, and they're not going to participate in the debate. Well, that makes fucking sense, right? Wrong. So I think that the world has changed, right? The United States has changed, and Omar Bradley is a quaint figure, right, in our history. Right, a general whose time was World War II. This ain't World War II anymore. They don't wear uniforms. They don't own land. They are a movement. The problems are complex. And you can't have assholes like Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and the rest of those idiots, right, leading a president of the United States around by his nose who's not smart enough, right, to restrain the power of the United States, and in doing so, kills hundreds of thousands of innocent people, as well as thousands of our own troops. So, anyway, we talk about that in the second hour. Jeez, Mac, you're moderately fired up this morning. Yeah, you're going to hear, I think, probably next week, I'm tweaking it. I interviewed General Zinni, and maybe one of the coolest interviews I've ever done. And so I'm fortunate enough to get to interview these guys, right? General Mattis, we were on the phone for like an hour and a half, right? And Zinni, we were on the phone for like 3 hours almost. Talking, we talked for an hour just about current events and these kind of issues before we went on. Holy shit, man, I wish I would have recorded that and I could put that on the air. Yeah, he said, hey, look, you think you're pissed? If you knew the truth behind the curtain, you'd be really pissed. And then he told me some of it. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Yeah. And I mean, it's not like hookey-roo, like anything. Right? I mean, so the UN inspectors that went to Iraq, were there Americans here? Yep. One was a former Marine. What do you think they did when they got home or were on their way home? Who do you think they talked to? There's nothing here. We're looking, man. It ain't here. We can't find it. So, it was, you know, the whole thing bullshit. And they knew it. Right? It's not like Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld didn't know this shit. They knew it. But they thought that they could flip an Islamic State that is really three different cultures compressed into one, you know, octagon. And if you take the clamps off it, you know, the war plan predicted, like, you know, you're going to have unrest and insurgency, then it'll be followed by civil war. That's kind of what happened, right? And then, right, you know, the accelerant to all of it was, well, let's stop paying the military and we'll fire them and send them home and not pay their pensions too. Well, there you go. Just solve your manpower crisis for Al-Qaeda and ISIS, specifically in El Anbar. It's just like, so it was an awesome conversation with him. So we're going to do another installment of On Discipline. And General Zinn, I'll tease a little bit of it. You know what he wanted our core values to be? Courage, honor, discipline. Not courage, honor, commitment. He said, when you think of the Marine Corps, what are the Marine Corps' core values? Courage, honor, commitment? No, courage, honor, discipline. I was like, whoa. Yeah, tease any. What's up? So, so that's coming next week. Now, I want to tack something on to end of it, and that's what I'm working on right now. Right. That's what I'm working on right now. So I'll produce that, and then I'll get that tacked on to the end of it, and you'll hear T. Zinni talking on discipline. And let me tell you, it's fucking awesome. Okay, it is awesome. The do you know? Remember the kid who wrote the letter that said he was headed for? He's trying to get into OCS. He's a lawyer, and he finally got accepted. He's leaving for OCS today. He wrote me an email last night. Good evening, sir. I thought I would share with you that I'm leaving for Quantico tomorrow morning. It's hard to believe the day has come, but here we are. I am equal parts excited and nervous, with a healthy bit of apprehension about what the first few days have in store. I'm nervous because it's so radically different from my life as an attorney, but I'm excited because I know I have a lot to learn from the outstanding Marines at Officer Candidate School. My OSO, Officer Selection Officer, has assured me numerous times that I'll be fine, that I'll make it through to graduation. I have no choice other than to believe him. He has delivered every step along the way. I have to believe that the board would not have selected me if they didn't also believe that I would make it. I take heart in that. No, you know what? Everybody, like, now it's not a theoretical event anymore. Now you're headed in that direction. And then they screw you. They shave your head. And so now you can't go home. You go home with a shaved head. And everybody's like, oh, hey, you home already? Wait a minute, you just left. What's going on? And so the Marine Corps, they know what they're doing, man. Once they get their hook in you, they screw you so bad. You might be interested to know that the group of candidates from Ann Arbor, Michigan, includes two former college football players, one former college basketball player, one outstanding female candidate, and one 32-year-old attorney who once weighed 313 pounds, yours truly. We are all taking a few days to travel down and check into OCS on Saturday afternoon. If you and your audience are prayer for people, I suppose I would solicit prayers for all the candidates for safety, perseverance, and physical strength, especially on those inevitably difficult, dark days. I have no doubt there will be times when we ask ourselves what on earth we got ourselves into. Well, that starts from the first few minutes. And be sorely tempted to quit. That won't happen. I never thought about quitting my whole time there. If I get sent home for screwing up or otherwise being unfit, so be it. I have given it my all, but I'll be damned if I'll quit. I would never forgive myself for that. That is true. And again, I talk about... when I do post-traumatic learning, I talk about what makes the Marine Corps different. It's nothing the Marine Corps does. It's the people who respond to our marketing shit, right? We don't promise you a rose garden, okay? the few, the proud, the Marines. Maybe you can be one of us. Maybe you, not we'd like you to be one of us. Maybe you could be one of us. The few, the proud. So the person that responds to that is a different person, right? And then you, then once they start now, because it's all out there, you know, they look at videos of, you know, of recruit training and officer candidate school, and they see the craziness. And that still doesn't deter them. That's a cool organization, man. You want to hang out. You want to party with those guys and girls, because when it gets difficult, that's what, you know, it's what they thought it would be. So anyway, he goes on to say, I don't know that anybody's prayers are going to help you, Andrew. You better be helping yourself. I'd also like to thank you again for your show. I've continued to listen every day over the past few months. I am better for it. Even my parents have listened to some of your podcasts. It has been inspiring. I hope to incorporate some of your knowledge into my experience at OCS that helps see me through. I plan on being there at the end. All the best, Andrew. So good luck there, candidate. Don't fuck it up. I think, you know, everybody does that. I mean, I didn't know, like, I've told the story. I didn't know shit about the Marine Corps. There was no YouTube. Nobody in my family was in the Marine Corps. I'd just seen Marines. And I'd read about them, and they always impressed me, man. And so when I thought about joining the military, there was only one branch of service I went down and spoke with, and that was being a Marine. I didn't know shit about OCS, and other than, you know, little blurbs I read. Full Metal Jacket was out, but I don't think I'd seen it, right? So I didn't know. I just went. Yeah, and I look at, like, my sons, man. They know, like, everything. Like, here's what you do every week, and here's this, and here's that. I didn't know shit. So good luck, Andrew. Don't screw it up, man. Put your head down and don't quit, man. Do not quit. And if you don't quit, normally things tend to work out all right. And so good luck to you and everybody from Ann Arbor. Maybe you could be one of us. The few, the proud, the Marines. So, on that note, let me read you an email. Are you kidding me this morning? What the hell is going on at All Marine Radio? Ed Sheeran? And then in parentheses, I do like the song. Yeah, you know, come on. I got to change it up every once in a while just to keep my own sanity. But yeah, that is, let me tell you, if you haven't listened to the album, my daughter Catherine told me it was a great album. And I'm a fan of his. And, but the album's better than she even articulated to me. And now she says, oh, I told you that. I'm like, really, Catherine? Really, we're going to go there? I got to tell you a story about, I'm at Colleen's volleyball game. Now, Colleen's volleyball coach struggles in the leadership department. He's 26 years old. He kicks one of Colleen's friends off the team via text message. She's not a discipline problem. She wasn't disrespectful. You know, none of that. Wasn't committed enough. In a text message, kicks her off the team. So I went to see the principal, who's a retired Marine officer. I didn't get to him, but I'm going to. So I see the associate principal. He says, well, why don't you talk to the athletic director first? And I said, all right. So I talked to this guy. And this is like 3 weeks ago. And he went in his office, so I call him. I tell him what happened. He said, well, you know, I'd heard that. And he said, I'll talk to him, and then I'll talk to her. And so when I got back, I'm talking to Colleen, and something comes up. Oh, Colleen tells me that her friend went to see the coach. And the coach said, I did you a favor kicking you off this team. And I said, wait a minute, did the athletic director call Colleen's friend? And she said, no. So now I'm pissed, right? I'm pissed. So I did what I'm supposed to do. I stayed in my lane as a parent, right? Went to the athletic director, and now I got the back of your hand? Really? You think that's how this is going to work? So I'm sitting at the volleyball game yesterday with my ex-wife, Susan, And so we're sitting there. Susan's heavily involved in the booster shit, right? Susan went to school at this high school. Oh, yeah. So, like, it's everything Colleen can do to keep her mother from, like, putting on the mascot uniform and, like, doing crazy shit. So, anyway, trust me, my ex-wife would do that. She would do that. So we're sitting there, and she looks over, and she says, oh, there's Nate. I said, the athletic director? She says, yeah. I said, where? And she points at him, and I take off. Poof. And from behind me, I hear her say, oh, shit. And so I go down those bleachers in like three-step, and I walk right up to him. I stick my hand out, I introduce myself, and I said, hey, you and I had a conversation about 3 weeks ago. And he said, yeah. I said, but you haven't spoken to him yet about it, and you haven't spoken to her about it yet. And you told me you would. And he said, well, school just started. And I'm like, now, should I, like, go gangster on the guy? Or should I be restrained? Which version of Mac should I be? Oh, for the record, Andrew, right? You got somebody in Pennsylvania praying for your ass, all right? Right? But let me tell you, Andrew, it's not going to help. There's no cosmic link to OCS. As much as Nancy might think there is. It's on you, dude. You better... My voice is cracked. Puberty. The late version. It's on you, Andrew. There ain't nobody, right? There's no atheist in a foxhole. There's no atheist at OCS, but guess what? Guess who ain't coming to make an appearance at OCS? Now, Nancy will pray to fortify you and all the great blessings that God can bestow on you, but... Guess what, dude? It's on you. So, anyway, so back to the athletic director. The athletic director, that dude, he's like, so, well, you know, and then today, I would have kind of dealt with it, but, because it's on my list, but we had a water main break, and we almost had to cancel this game, and I'm like, I'm just staring at him. Debating, like, which version of myself should I be? So... I decided to be the restrained version. I said, all right. I said, well, look, you've seen that commercial on TV, right? The average kid is quitting sports when they're 11. She's been one of the better players in this program for 2 years. There's no reason she shouldn't be on this team. And if she's not committed enough, then his job is to work on that stuff with her. That's why we do, right, interscholastic sports. To develop the character, because these kids are not going to play in the professional volleyball league, for God's sakes. They're not even going to, they won't even come close to getting a scholarship. So, what are we fucking doing if we're not developing people? And oh, by the way, the numbers on the team are relatively small, so you don't need to be kicking off good students for stupid reasons. So that dude needs a mentor. So that's what I kind of articulated. Hey, he needs help. He needs a mentor. And in the back of my head is that, because if he swings his shit at my daughter, like, this place coming down. Exactly. So with all that said, good morning. The national anthem happens now. On a Thursday. Lynch and Kenny coming up here in a little bit. Thank you. candidates weighing in. Now we have an official Allmarine Radio pet candidate. As a golf company nerd, my biggest worry was rolling an ankle on one of those damn routes on the trail and getting recycled. The thought of enduring that first week again terrified me. The boredom of standing in lines and getting screamed at repeatedly, desperately hoping that I don't get noticed. Good times! Exclamation mark. You know it is. I mean, you look back. and then from St. Nancy of Pennsylvania. God helps those who help themselves, for sure. Pre-traumatic winning training. You know what? Pre-traumatic winning training is important, man, and that's what I, you know, I've told the story repeatedly this week. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I get emotional when I talk about it. But when that sergeant came up to me and said that his pre-traumatic winning training, when his father committed suicide, sir, I knew what to do. I knew what to do for me. I knew what to do for my family. I knew what to do with my friend. I could stop doing this show today, and those words, along with, you know, helping, you know, a lance corporal who was lost, I mean, would carry me for the rest of my life. And I'm not kidding one bit about that. But, I mean, pre-traumatic training is really, I think, really important, because everybody falls into two categories relative to post-traumatic winning. One, you're already in the darkness. The grenade's already gone off in your bedroom. And you're groping, looking for... you're looking for a way, right? But there wasn't a class in high school, not a class in college. You know, people that have gone through it tend not to talk about it, so most of us discover on our own. So you're either in that group, the grenade's already gone off, or you're in the other group, which is the grenade's going to go off. Nobody gets to the car wash without getting wet. And so to hear somebody, you know, to know people in both groups. And again, the coolest thing, on Friday, both those guys were there and they both introduced the class. And so it was Marines from both those groups whose lives have been changed by that class. Standing up at the start of the class telling people that, like, yeah, we were here 9 months ago. I didn't know what was in store for me, but because of this class, when it happened, I knew what to do. I knew that there was a door in the back of the room. I knew that I could find that door. And now I'm helping other people that, you know, have gone through tough stuff because I've lived it. And I'm sitting over on the corner of the stage, man. I'm like the happiest little kid in the kingdom. Yeah, so Nancy just coined the term, man, pre-traumatic training. And it is, it's a huge thing because, I mean, think about that. Your pre-traumatic training, right, now, if you embrace it, whatever the fuck you want to do, if you do one of those things, here's another email. Mac, you're saying fuck an awful lot to have a saint listen. It's part of what makes her saintly, is listening to my profanity. But think about that. You mentally prepared them. You can't emotionally prepare them. But those emotional ups and downs will be cushioned by the solace they'll take in knowing that that door is actually there, that there's a path there, that it's a worn path, right? That our warrior culture has worn it, right? And now we export it to other people, and that they're going to be part of what exports it to more people. And so, you know, you're in one of two groups, man. You're either in, you know, the grenade's either gone off in your room or the grenade hadn't been in your room yet, but it's coming. Rest assured it's coming. And so... pre-traumatic wing. Yeah, we're not doing that. This not. That's for tomorrow when the chef comes on. So, yeah. All right. This is dedicated to Andrew and actually and everybody up in Ann Arbor. That's pretty impressive, man. You know, what, three different college athletes? That's pretty impressive. So that's what they have in Ann Arbor. So good for the Marine Corps. All right. Don't screw it up, boys and girls. So this is dedicated to you. Don't fuck it up.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing.
Come on, that is funny. All right, that's funny. And saying it at graduation, come on, that's rich, right? And you know, it's one of his standard lines. But I mean, come on, that's well delivered, well done.
Other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marine. And the infantry got its name, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah,
you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
He is the shit, man. Jack Riley, he is the legitimate one of the best dudes I've ever met.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Big weather off the coast of North Carolina, so we'll get to that here in a minute. Currently, 77 with partly sunny skies in Quantico. In and around Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, you have the following. A hurricane warning is in effect through September 5th until 19:15 in the evening. A storm surge warning is in effect until September 5th at 19:15. A tornado watch, yeah, is in effect through today at until 7 p.m. And then that tornado watch is in there a second time. Tropical weather statement, right, in effect until tonight at 7:30. Flash flood watch until tomorrow afternoon, Friday, at 1400. So, currently a Category 4 hurricane. It has winds up to 110 miles an hour, moving north-northeast at 8 miles an hour. Now, that's a good thing, moving north-northeast. Because that means hopefully it'll move more east than north. And it'll get back out to sea. It will tangentially impact the coast of Carolina. So I know that they were preparing for that yesterday. I was talking to General Furness about something else. And I said, what are you doing? He said, getting ready for the hurricanes. What we do here. So if you look at the track, right, it's set to move. You know, continue to move off the coast, which is a good thing. So, anyway, that's Camp Lejeune. Across the country, a little bit cooler, cloudy in 86 right now in Marine Corps Base 29 Palms. On the coast, man, it's been brutally hot. Yeah, I hate to whine, but I'm not going to lie, I'm going to whine right now. You know, it's been like 75 at night, right? That's the air temperature. Are you shitting me? Yeah, so cloudy in 76 right now at Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy in 81. Okinawa's got 5 weather advisories. What the fuck? So we'll check out Okinawa's weather. It's dark, raining in 79 with wind. All right? The 5 weather advisories. 1 is a high wave warning, 2 thunderstorm advisory, 3 gale advisory, 4 heavy rainfall advisory, and 5 a flood advisory. All those until 6 a.m. on Friday, June 6th. So, well, wait a minute. They're ahead of us, Okinawa, by about, I don't know. So, what's the local time there? Like 9, 10 hours, something like that? So, they're ahead of us by about 17, 16. So, midnight. So, they've got about 6 more hours of that. We continue on with the weather. Let's see. Where'd I leave off? On Okinawa. In the Alambar province of Iraq, late in the day, early in the evening, it is clear, dark, and 99 degrees. And in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, where hopefully Taliban are going to get whacked here quickly. Right? Another two Americans were killed as a car bomb exploded in Kabul. Yeah. Somebody got to pay. Somebody got to pay. Negotiating from a position of restraint or weakness, they don't know the difference. Restraint is weakness. Don't restrain yourself when you fight those guys. Kill them with impunity because that's what they need. Currently, it is clear, dark, and 90 degrees in the Helmand province in Marja, about smack dab in the center of the province. In the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area, cloudy this morning, 76 degrees, heading for 88 degrees. Yeah, and a low overnight of, it says, 72. Tomorrow, 88. Saturday, 82. Yeah, and humid. Like what happened? Like, where the hell did this come from? All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at the news. Yeah, and there's enough in there to piss me off, too. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you. and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Colleen actually helped make dinner last night. Yeah. Trying to be a woman. Feel the sting of letting go of all hope. They lost in volleyball yesterday. The other team was pretty good. Yeah, they had one. They were good. They had one girl that was a great great volleyball player, great athlete. And she knew what she was doing too. And another girl, really tall, who was like hitting down. Like, whoa, what's going on here? So, yeah. I love that Colleen plays sports, so many sports. She was not athletic at all as a kid. I mean, she, you know, she'd go out and play, but she never, she, like the other kids, she didn't play like, you know, like every all kids play soccer now? Colleen didn't. Had no interest in going out there and running around. And now, she will earn the most letters of any of our kids. She'll be a three-sport, like, student in, what, 3 of her 4 years in high school. Yeah, she'll... yeah, she'll earn nine... No, she'll earn at least 6 varsity letters, maybe 7. Peyton Davis. All right, let me get to the news. This is going to piss me off, so whatever. I talked about the bombing. An American and Romanian service members killed in Taliban suicide bombing in Kabul. One service member from the United States, one from Romania, were killed Thursday in a Taliban suicide bomb which exploded in the Afghan capital of Kabul near a housing neighborhood which housed Western embassies and military headquarters, heightening concerns that a peace deal with the insurgents is moving too quickly. The names of the service members killed were being withheld, blah, 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 blah. A U.S. defense official confirmed the suicide car bombing caused the two deaths near an area that included the U.S. Embassy, the NATO Resolute Support Mission, and diplomatic missions. How can it get in there? Was it just outside? Yeah, and let me just tell you, look, if, I don't know. So you want to negotiate peace with us, but this is the way that you're going to do it? Now, there's a part of me that believes that, did the Taliban claim it? Let me look down the article. The Taliban claimed the attack targeted vehicles of foreigners as they tried to enter a heavily guarded area where Afghan national security authorities and the NATO mission have offices. Like, I mean, they've just been hammering, right? They have been hammering the Afghan civilian population. Well, that's a good omen for peace, right? Listen to this story now. This is another one that pisses me off, right? A VA employee pleads guilty to leaking retired Army officers' medical records. Now, why do you think that's the said record got leaked? Because he was running for office. And it got leaked to the opponent's campaign so they could use it against him. Like, are you shitting me? I want to know what happened to this asshole. The Department of Veterans Affairs, right, a Department of Veterans Affairs employee has pled guilty to leaking the medical records of Richard Ojeda as the retired Army major was running for Congress. Federal prosecutors announced Tuesday that Jeffrey Miller has acknowledged accessing the medical records of six veterans when he was working for the VA's Benefits Administration. Authorities say the 39-year-old Miller took pictures of Ojeda's records, then sent the image to an unnamed acquaintance. Ojeda says the records were distributed among high-ranking Republicans to derail his campaign for West Virginia's 3rd Congressional District in 2018. He sued the VA for documents related to the agency's investigation of Miller. He lost the election to Representative Carol Miller. Her spokeswoman says the congressman isn't related to Jeffrey Miller and that she's never seen the medical records. Really? Like, should that surprise me? I mean, what a... $3.5 billion diverted from the DOD to build a border wall, right? So what's the opportunity cost? What isn't going to get built? The Pentagon's move to divert $3.6 billion from military construction coffers to fund 175 miles of border fencing will defund planned projects in 23 states, 3 U.S. territories, and at bases in 20 different countries. The defense, listen to this shit, okay? Now, remember, the Democrats control the House, right? The Pentagon is confident that Congress will later provide another $3.6 billion for the 127 planned construction projects worldwide, from which funds were diverted to pay for sections of the border wall built in Texas, Arizona, and California, as part of President Trump's National Emergency Proclamation. The Defense Department has no plan B should lawmakers decide not to... So wait a minute, let me get this straight. So, Corey Dickinson, who wrote this, whoever they talk to, they think that the Democrats are going to refund these projects that the DOD sidetracked the money from. What guarantee do they have that the president won't do it again? Take another $3.6 billion. Where does that come from? All right, here's a list of the projects impacted. Locations hit hardest by the fund transfers include Puerto Rico, which lost $400 million worth of DOD projects, which primarily had to do with repairs from their hurricane. New York, $160 million planned projects for the Army West Point parking facility and an engineering center were scrapped. Virginia and North Carolina also saw huge cuts. $90 million for four projects was defunded in Virginia, including a cyber operations facility in Langley. North Carolina saw about $80 million for projects defunded, including a battalion complex at Camp Lejeune. And it goes. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, they'll refund those, no problem. I wouldn't. If I was a Democrat, I'd be pissed. There's an article in USNI News surface forces striving for combat-ready ships and battle-minded crews. Let me tell you, the Navy, right? The Navy's paying for decades of being an undisciplined organization. That's what's going on. I mean, right now, you know, the story earlier this week, they are by far, right, the most obese service. So they're obese, they're undisciplined, their special operators are a shit show, right? They're driving ships into each other, right? You talk about a rudderless, soulless organization. The Navy's got to get back to being a disciplined fighting force from top to bottom, right? The SEALs, too cool for school. The surface warfare people don't know what the fuck they're doing driving ships. How scary is that? Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. So, anyway, so that's what this article is about, written by Megan Epstein, who writes a lot for Megan Epstein, I'm not sure how she pronounces it. She writes a lot for U.S. on NI News. The head of the Navy Surface Force is pushing the fleet to be more ready for high-end combat, both in the skills of the crew and the material condition of the ships. Vice Admiral Richard Brown, commander of Naval Surface Forces, wants a culture change that creates a, quote, combat-ready ships and combat and battle-minded crews, he told USNI News in a recent interview. In many ways, this means letting go of the reins and letting ship commanders push their crews to achieve excellence. Oh, yeah, but then they're going to go behind the commanders of the ships, right? And they're going to do their little, command climate survey, and then you're going to get relief for that. And so those command climate surveys need to be tempered, okay? If the crew hates you, then they hate you. Are you doing anything wrong? Are you being too hard on them? Then so be it. What does a combat-ready ship mean? That means ships deploy and leave, no redundancy at the pier. That everything works on the ship the moment they deploy. Noting that the Navy previously had sought cost savings and efficiencies rather than preparing for at-sea battle drills, they could knock out a piece of the equipment and require that all the redundant systems be in good working order. When I took over, I put together some staff goals. It was pretty simple. It said we were going to deploy our ships fully certified, fully manned at 92/95 fit fill, and CASREP free. That means my BHAG, big hairy audacious goal, never heard that before, out of that was to deploy CASREP free, which means there's nothing wrong with the ship, because we had not done that for decades. Quite honestly, in January of 18, we were deploying ships with 25 to 30 Category 2 CASREPs completely unsat. But in April of this year, we deployed the Boxer Amphibious Ready Group CASREP free. The entire ARG was CASREP free. Well, I mean, fuck. How can you be that fucked up? We were deploying ships with 25 to 30 CASREPs. Now, again, Category 2 CASREPs. And that means a major end piece of the ship does not work. Brown acknowledged that it costs more money this way, and it places more burden on the already strained maintenance and logistics communities. It's their job, man. What did they sign up for? Maintenance and logistics of ships? Guess what? That is demanding. If you don't want to be in a demanding business, go the fuck away. But don't use that sorry shit as an excuse not to do your job, and somebody trying to operate the son of a bitch that you're supposed to maintain, right, and have parts for, can't do it at sea. Because your job is so fucking hard. See, and this is the shit the Navy believed that. And they accepted those excuses. Before he said, I don't know who this guy is, but I kind of like him. Before he said the mentality was, hey, you have 6 fire pumps. If you have 2 down, am I going to spend extra money to get the fire pump up before you deploy? The institution would say, well, It's not cost effective to do that. Great. The combat ready ship aspect says when we go into a fight, there ain't going to be FedEx or DHL flying into the theater. So why would you leave your redundancy at the pier? But it does come at a cost, because sometimes parts break and I can't get the part to the ship through the supply system prior to the deployment. So I have to go and do a cannibalization and then pay that part back to the ship that I cannibalized, he continued. So there's two schools of thought on that. My thought is, I want a full-up ship that's forward. And then I'll make sure that the ship that's back here gets its system full up in time. Brown says he's happy with the progress. I like the dude, man. Brown says he talks to crews every chance he gets and tells them, quote, what war at sea is really not like. It's not antiseptic. It's horrendous. He referenced World War II battles of Guadalcanal, where ships were hit, and amid whatever personal casualties the ship took, sailors would still fight off Japanese aircraft despite not having radar or electrical power. The three-star admiral said one of his first acts after taking over the surface force was to release a message on command. In there, I wrote a line that says, the way the U.S. Navy commands is what makes us so powerful. It really is. We have a unique concept of command, and because of that, I implicitly trust my commanding officers. So also, with that trust comes incredible and unyielding accountability and responsibility. This is a great article, and it's a pretty long one, too. So, yeah, check it out. USNI News. The surface fleet. Hey, the United States, let me tell you, you know, when you're going to get after the Chinese and the Russians, the Navy's going to play a gigantic role in that. And it's not going to play the role it's played in the last, you know, 15 years, 18 years, which is stand by and kind of watch everybody else. Navy's going to get thumped in the face a few times. And they're going to lose ships. They're going to lose a lot of sailors. And if they aren't ready for that, they're going to lose even more. So, I mean, I don't know who this dude is, but I like him. There's nothing of significance in Marine Corps times. There's a bunch of bullshit stories about a neo-Nazi recruit, another bullshit story about some shit movie that got made, another bullshit story about an intoxicated Marine breaking into a house and cooking himself a meal. So, like, I'm not sure why they exist today, other than to promote, right, clickbait. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then I'll get you on to Kenny and Lynch. A little bit late this morning, but it is what it is. Number one, Secretary of State Pompeo declines to sign risky Afghan peace deal. Now that, if you read the story, that's not an entirely accurate, right? Secretary Pompeo's people email time, maybe following the release of the article, and said that if it's appropriate that he signs it, he would sign. If he's the appropriate signature for it. It sounded like a little bit of double talk, but anyway. And it outlines why. It's actually a pretty interesting article to read. It's the most detail I've seen about disagreement relative with the Taliban. So anyway, that's in time. Number two, here's everything that the Pentagon is putting on hold to concentrate on building a border wall. That's the opportunity cost of using DOD funding. Number three, Air Force will keep the A-10 off the chopping block in its next budget request. So the Air Force routinely puts the A-10 on. It's routinely taken off. Now, I don't know if they do that purposefully, right? In that, like, hey, we'll put that on. And then we'll let them say, no, that's got to be in there. And then they'll fund it. And then they'll increase our budget. And hopefully they won't make us take anything out. So maybe that's a strategy they use. I don't know. Number four, the F-22 and the F-35 won't hit Mattis's readiness targets. The Air Force's stealthy fighters will not meet an 80% mission-capable rate requirement set by former Secretary Jim Mattis, top officials warned on Wednesday. So what is the readiness rate? Are we publishing that? Of the 5,413 or so aircraft in the fleet, the percentage able to fly at any given time decreased steadily each year since at least fiscal year 12, 2012 when 77.9% of aircraft were deemed flyable. In fiscal year 17, the metric plunged to 71.3% and dipped again to 69.97% in fiscal year 18. Analysts were skeptical that such an increase could be achieved in just 1 year, and appears the skepticism is well-founded. Well, what's the percentage? And then it goes into why the number is what it is. But it doesn't give the actual number. It just says that the Air Force is warning that it will not hit that number. Well, I want to know what their number is. Are you going to be at 79 or 71? Because that's a difference. Number five, can POTUS sign your Make America Great hat? Experts weigh in on recent campaign season controversies involving troops. Let me tell you, if you worry about shit like that, go get a life, man. Right? All that does is embolden lawyers to be bigger assholes than they already are. Some operational news from overseas. U.S. war games are trying out concepts in the fight against China and Russia. So that's going on. U.S. troops and allied Kurdish forces are patrolling the Syria-Turkey border. The U.S.-Turkey safe zone in Syria is off to a good start, according to Kurdish officials. The Turkish officials don't seem to be that enthralled with it. A Taliban suicide bomber kills at least 10 in Kabul, wounding 42. In that blast, one American, one Romanian service member were killed. Story in the New York Times. Afghans push back on U.S. deal with the Taliban, fearing too few assurances. And if you read the Times story, it says there's no assurances. The Afghan government is pushing back against American diplomats on the eve of a troop withdrawal deal with the Taliban, concerned that the proposed agreement does not include enough assurances that the insurgents will abide by their promises after American troops leave entirely. So let me just tell you this. So here's the question. Is it you, the Taliban, you have to do this and we'll leave, or is it we'll leave and then you do this? If it's we'll leave and then you do that, that's politically driven. And so the President of the United States can stand up and say, hey, I got us out of Afghanistan. Right? And interestingly enough, Jim Mattis firing a warning shot by talking about, you know, the utter failure of Barack Obama and Joe Biden in Iraq. And how everybody predicted, if you do this, precipitously, if you do this unilaterally, we will have to go back. And we did. Thank you, Barack. Well done, Bozo.
Keep your eye on that. And I think the president desperately wants to fulfill a campaign promise in that he knows more than the generals do. And all that other bullshit that he says, okay? But he doesn't. And now he's finding out the difficulty. You might want to do that. Every ounce of your body might want to do that, okay? But if you do that, right, on every TV screen in the United States, when the carnage erupts in Afghanistan, it's going to be laid at your feet. So it should be conditions-based, and the conditions should be mutual. If the Taliban does this, we'll do this. And you can gradually draw it down based on the progress. If they don't do the stuff they say. And let me tell you, what I learned about in Najaf, right? So Najaf, if you look it up on a map, it is in the south central part of the country. We weren't down there, okay? We had a MEU, a Marine Expeditionary Unit, one of the ones that floats around. They came ashore. A friend of mine was the CEO of the battalion, John Mayer. So they flew up. The MEU commander and Lieutenant Colonel Mayer fly up to Ramadi to see General Mattis because we're going to support them. And Mattis says, look, I know you're not chopped to me, right? But you're Marines, right? One team, one fight. And we'll support you any way we can. So stay plugged into us and let us know how we can help you, right? And here's what we know. So anyway, they go down to Najaf and they're fighting Maqtada al-Sadr and the Shiites down there. And they get into a big fight in the shop. They have them surrounded in this mosque compound. And I've told the story, but that's when the Iraqi army soldiers, who some of them had fought us twice and survived, said, yeah, this is going to be awesome. The walls of that mosque will be red with their blood tomorrow. And we're like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. And they were like, what do you mean? We need to kill every one of them. No, we're probably going to negotiate. And the Iraqis were like, no. If you negotiate, they can lie. Don't you understand that? You're the infidel. Nothing they tell you is binding on them. Their job is to eject you from, right, this country. You're the infidel on their soil. They'll say anything. That's not the way we do it. And that's not the way we did it. So, anyway. So the question is, how is the deal structured? Is it a tit for tat? You do this, we'll do this. Or is it the Americans are going to leave? If it's the Americans are going to leave, that's clown show shit. Right? That is political assholes, again, right, running away. And the question is, will we go back or will we just say, fuck it, let them die? All right, now, with that said, the Lynch-Kenny event is coming up next. So, don't touch that dial. More Ball Marine Radio on this Wednesday, in this long-winded Thursday that feels like Wednesday, coming up next here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.